And welcome back to KTOO Public Media's Juno Afternoon. I'm your host today, Andy Klein. And for our next guest, we're going to be talking politics. The state government and politics reporter for KTOO and Alaska Public Media is here. That's Andrew Kitchenman. Andrew, thanks so much for coming in, letting us know what crazy, wild stuff's happening up on the Hill this year, because it is a pretty wild year, isn't it?
Thanks a lot, Andy. Yeah, it's interesting.
It's unprecedented, right, at this point in the House, at least.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the Alaska House has not picked a speaker, which means that it can't do its work. It can't hear bills or form committees.
Right.
And that really has to do with how closely divided the House is. So we have there are 40 members of the House of Representatives. 23 are Republicans. But three of those Republicans don't want an all-Republican majority. They want – there's a history of bipartisanship, at least recent history of bipartisanship in the House. And they don't want a primarily Republican caucus. Two of the three Republicans caucus with Democrats the last – 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the third Republican basically has said he wants to have the people who control the House be divided pretty evenly between Republicans and Democrats.
And that's kind of my understanding as the latest development, where for a long time I think that people following the legislature thought, okay, the House is going to fall one way or the other. They're going to figure out a deal so that one party or the other can have the chairmanships and have the Speaker of the House. Now there's actually a proposal out there to really actually split power. Is there a notion about how that would work?
Well, if it were to happen, there could be two speakers, one coming from each party, and they would sort of alternate. There's different ways of doing it. One potential model is that they would alternate
alternate days, essentially, or alternate.
I think that's the kind of thing.
Yeah.
They've never gone so far as to really publicly talk about how that would work, and I think that's because there's no agreement on it. And this is just the stuff that's necessary to do work. I think what's in the background is that the governor is proposing large cuts to the state government. We're going to learn the details on Wednesday, but the cuts are going to be significant. They're probably going to touch every part of state government, with the possible exception of some public safety areas, which the governor ran on as someone that where he wanted to – an area where he wanted to expand – say the number of troopers.
So there's a lot of talk that what's really happening is that they want to wait till they see this budget, then they'll kind of figure out how they might be able to form to deal with the budget.
Yeah, there's – I think one way of looking at it is that the legislators are responding to – they're potentially responding to pressure from their constituents as well as – anticipating pressure in the future. And so one way of looking at it is that the Republican members of the legislature, by and large, have run on campaigns to both reduce state government and to increase permanent fund dividends. And if when you share power with Democrats, both of those things become somewhat more challenging because it looks like Democratic legislators will be working to preserve as much government funding as possible. Depending on the details, mm-hmm. You know, we don't know exactly what's going to be in the budget. And the mostly Democratic House majority, along with the Republican Senate last year, the last 2 years, has reduced permanent fund dividends. And of course, people might be saying, well, we want state spending and permanent fund dividends, and that's hard to do without some significant new taxes, which haven't proven to be politically easy to
– Yeah, and this has all been part of – like we heard so much during the previous administration about a fiscal plan. They wanted this comprehensive fiscal plan that was going to show a way towards us. That was never reached. So now we've kind of got this situation where the House is kind of just on hold while they're trying to figure this out. Meanwhile, what's the Senate doing?
The Senate's been holding hearings considering Governor Dunleavy's cabinet appointments. Just this past week, they've started holding finance subcommittee hearings. They don't have the budget. These are the groups who really dig into the details of the budget and look at each department of the budget and how they're going to make changes. And what they're doing is sort of looking at the background and the history to sort of get ready for next Wednesday. So they've been meeting.
The thing that's kind of the interesting part is just, I guess I have two questions. One is, does the House, the fact that they're not organized, are they putting themselves in sort of a weaker position than the Senate to even understand what's happening with the budget or what's happening with these issues? Or is that not something they're still able to see what the issues are? They're still able to research and work on those things, so that's not as much of an issue?
Some House members have been attending informational hearings that are somewhat similar to committee meetings. You don't know who's going to be making these decisions and you don't know who's going to have power. And so that really changes the character of the meetings and the discussion.
Right.
So, they're going to be behind just time-wise. They still basically have the same amount of power at the end of the day. Each chamber has as much say as the other on what the budget's going to look like. I don't think the House is going to cede any of the power influence it has over the budget just because they're going to spend less time on it, potentially less time on it in the Senate. If the House organizes right after Wednesday, which could happen, then they'll be starting on a fairly even point as the Senate.
But the Senate has in the meantime been doing work on other bills, I'm assuming, and have been sort of moving along on other issues. Or have they been sort of in a holding pattern too?
To some extent, they're in a holding pattern too. They're starting to hear a lot of Governor Dunleavy's ideas for criminal justice reform. But senators know that who controls the House will also have an effect on any legislation that gets passed. So they don't necessarily want to spend tons of time on bills that aren't going to get a positive reception in the House. The criminal justice thing, it's pretty clear that there is going to be some major – just like in the last 2 years and then there was a major criminal justice bill 3 years ago, and then there have been two major revisions to that bill, 2017, 2018. There's going to be more major revisions this year, I think it's safe to say based on my conversations.
Yeah, even an effort to repeal it entirely.
Yeah. There's no one bill that's like so it's known as Senate Bill 91 or SB 91 is the number for the law that was passed 3 years ago. There's no one repeal SB 91 bill. There's a series of pieces. There are elements of SB 91 that Governor Dunleavy wants to preserve. They're basically all elements the few elements of SB 91 that increased criminal penalties. But there are also elements that I think there's going to be some interest. There may be bipartisan interest in the legislature preserving some other elements. I don't think the legislature necessarily wants to give up on all ideas of using some of the ideas that are driving criminal justice reform across the country to affect Alaska. But they've received very negative responses, particularly in Anchorage, but certainly there's a lot of concern about crime here in Juneau. And a lot of people have connected the rising crime across the state over the last several years to the reductions in criminal sentences that were in Senate Bill 91. Now, crime was increasing before SB 91 was enacted, and it was increasing while it was being enacted. So there's a counter argument that a lot of the problems that people are seeing would have occurred regardless of SB 91.
Mm. So you mentioned Governor Dunleavy, who of course is our new governor. This is a little bit of a rocky start, I would think, for a new governor coming in. The legislature is, at least on the House side, is in fairly in disarray. a few of his appointments have not gone as smoothly as I'm sure he would like, and had some resignations. Tell us, give us a little bit of a wrap up on what's been happening there.
Yeah. Well, as far as the House not being organized, I think Governor Dunleavy would rather see a Republican-led House majority than have had a House majority organized on the first day of the session that was not Republican-led. So he's probably willing to wait a little bit. I'm sure he wants to see this resolved soon. And I'm sure he'll work with both sides. I mean, regardless of who controls the House, it's not like he'll be shutting the House out if the Speaker's a Democrat. But and then, yeah, he has had problems with in particular, there was Jonathan Quick, who was the commissioner of administration, resigned after there were legitimate questions raised about the truthfulness of information on both his resume and statements he had made in committee hearings. There's also been a lot of negative reaction to the first budget proposals that came from the governor. And that's not about this upcoming budget, which is the budget that will start in July. It's for the current fiscal year budget, the budget that ends in June. The governor basically proposed revoking $20 million for schools, and that's caused a big outcry among school supporters across the state. And I think that's probably taken up a bit more attention than maybe the administration anticipated. But the administration definitely is sending the sense. There's $20 million in cuts. The governor is going to be proposing probably $1.6 billion in cuts on Wednesday, which is 80 times as much of a cut as the governor proposed recently. And so governor's really, I think, gearing up and knows he's going to receive a lot of pushback and probably a lot of pushback here in Juneau because so many of the residents here either directly or indirectly work in jobs that are connected to the state government.
And speaking of that, when they came in, they gave a fairly unprecedented shot over the bow to state employees who were classified as being political appointees. Tell us a little bit about what happened there and what the reaction has been to that.
Yeah, more than 800 letters went out to state appointees. It gets a little complicated at this point to describe who these employees are, but they're at-will employees. They're employees who are not protected by the same state law that protects unionized state workers. That being said, there's very much a argument over how protected those employees are. And so he asked for resignations from more than 800. Relatively small number of those were accepted other than the ones who you might expect to be accepted. He accepted the outgoing commissioners, the commissioners, mm-hmm. the policy leaders of the Walker, former Governor Bill Walker's administration. They're all gone. But then there were a few more. Including, there were a few more, that, mm-hmm. and there have been some lawsuits.
The ACLU got involved.
Yeah. The ACLU is suing on behalf of two psychiatrists, medical doctor psychiatrists, based in Anchorage, and Libby Bacalar here in Juneau, the attorney. Who is a senior attorney for the state.
Yeah. So I think that in Juneau, that definitely sent a message of what this administration's priorities might be and that they were going to have their people in almost every facet of the government as much as possible. So what's ahead? Well, give us a quick preview of what's happening next. The budget, I guess, is the next big thing on the docket.
Yeah, and that'll really be the focus of attention both in the news media and in the legislature. Starting on Wednesday, they'll be going through to make the scale of cuts that the governor is likely to propose will probably require significant changes to state law in addition to the annual law that the legislature passes, which is the budget. You're really talking about reshaping state government, probably eliminating agencies, scaling back what the government does in some of the more expensive areas of government. So we're going to be very closely looking at how it will affect education or how it will affect Medicaid. And I'll be reporting on that, and we'll have my colleagues Rasha McChesney here in Juneau and Nat Herz with Alaska Public Media in Anchorage are working with me on covering that. And so we'll have a lot of news and more on that early next week.
More news to come. Yes. Well, Andrew Kitchenman from KTOO and Alaska Public Media, the state government and politics reporter. Thanks so much for coming in and filling us in a little bit on what's happening up on the Hill.
You're welcome, Andy. Thank you.
Thanks, Andrew.